from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, Wedding Bells and Legal History today, as Massachusetts became the first state in the nation to grant gays and lesbians the right to marry.
We are here at this hour to join Marcia and Tanya in marriage. I have to ask you what you would like to be called. Would you like to be spouses or wives?
Spouses.
Spouses, yes.
3, 2, 1, roll!
It feels like a personal moment that I never imagined that I would have when my partner and I first joined our lives. Even after we had children, I thought that the most personal moments we would ever have would be having children together, which was great and wonderful and exciting. But there'd never been any public affirmation of our relationship as one that's equal.
Nicole, you made it.
Of course, I made it.
I didn't realize I was waiting for this all my life, but this is what I've been waiting for, and I'm not going to give it back. I'm thrilled. I can't wait to be married to Arthur. And hell, I'm going to fight for that marriage.
Let us pray first for those in these lines waiting to receive what is an illegitimate piece of paper and one that is not in keeping with the righteous law of God.
Rob, I commit to love you until death do us part.
Rob, I commit to love you.
By the power vested in me by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I now pronounce you fully and legally married.
50 states and one today, the first to make gay marriage fully, formally legal. Today's history-making march down the aisle began in 2001 when 7 same-sex couples challenged Massachusetts' ban on gay marriage. In November last year, the state's Supreme Judicial Court ruled that a prohibition on gay marriage was unconstitutional and gave the state legislature 180 days to come up with a solution to allow gays to wed. There was a highly charged emotional debate and an unsuccessful call for U.S. Supreme Court intervention, but today, before family, friends, and the eyes of the nation, same-sex couples exchanged fully state-sanctioned vows in Massachusetts. Tonight on Point, an historic day for gay marriage and its implications for politics, civil rights, marriage, and families across the country. How would you describe the milestone America has passed today as its first state opens the door to fully legal gay marriage? What does it say about where the country, its families, and its understanding of civil rights are headed? Are you celebrating tonight? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me right now in the studio is WBUR's reporter Fred Tice, who's been covering the gay marriage story since the initial court case. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Tom.
You've been out there in the world today seeing what's going on. A lot of preparation for marriages, people needing a three-day period to pass.
A waiting period.
Some have waivers today. Some marriages, as we heard here on this tape, already going on. First in the nation, it's happening.
Yes, exactly. We don't know exactly how many people got married today. I tried to find out. It seems that no one has been keeping a total tally. The 3 towns in Massachusetts the gay and lesbian advocates and defenders expected would see the greatest number of weddings based on a survey they did a few days ago were Boston, Cambridge, and the town of Northampton, where Smith College is, about 2 hours west of Boston. In the city of Boston today, they issued 15 waivers of that 3-day period, meaning 15 couples expected to get married between today and tomorrow. In the city of Cambridge, the clerk said that she married 22 couples. And in Northampton, they didn't have a number, but they said at least 100 couples have applied for marriage licenses. Of course, that could be from now till next year. So unclear exactly how many folks
on the numbers.
Today.
But we have been hearing on tape and out in the streets and around town all last night when at the stroke of midnight, the cheering and bands playing and bells ringing and protest, a bit we saw as we heard just here. And today, marriages and celebration in churches and city halls and certainly across the gay community and a broader community, many celebrating, many others bewildered at how fast this has happened. And Fred, for all observers, the realization that this is an enormous first, the first in the country. This is different from what we've seen, for example, at San Francisco City Hall.
Yes, and the main difference, of course, is that marriage is legal here by the definition of the state. In California, obviously, there are all kinds of questions about whether any of those marriages will ultimately be recognized, as was the case with New Paltz and perhaps one or other
in New York and a couple of other places.
And so that's the big difference.
There's been a lot of buzz about it, but here, for the first time, a state saying, yes, you may be married. It was not without opposition. The state's governor, Mitt Romney, a Republican governor, a staunch opponent, though in the end he could not stop this.
Right. And Governor Romney issued a statement today saying that he urges people to follow the law. And what he's taken to mean by that is that he has said that people could not come from other states to get married. Now,
he resurrected an old, very old, nearly century-old law saying that no Massachusetts marriage could contravene the laws of the state of origin of the people getting married.
Exactly. A law that came up in the days of Jim Crow, but a law that is still on the books.
This was originally aimed at mixed-race marriage.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But right now we have 43 states that specifically prohibit same-sex marriage in some ways. Seven states, including Massachusetts, however, do not. So it's open to question as to what's going to happen to folks from those six states, at least when they come here. And come here they did today. I was in Somerville today, one of the cities
very
near Boston, actually part of the urban fabric of Boston. The mayor there is one of officials in three cities and towns in Massachusetts, the gay resort of Provincetown on Cape Cod, the city of Worcester, Massachusetts' second largest city, and then Somerville, the third, where local officials said that they would ignore Governor Romney's order not to marry people who reside in other states. They would only require that people would swear that they know of no legal impediment to their marriage.
So the point being there, in those towns, at least, Americans can come from anywhere. And here's where the story really does get national. And we're going to talk about this tonight. But there will be Americans at some point, perhaps from every state in the country, who have been legally married in Massachusetts, will go back to their own states and deal with everything that means. There have also been states today, I think, Fred, who have said, put their hands up and said, we'll recognize these marriages.
The Attorney General of Rhode Island, Patrick Lynch, said today that it's his understanding of Rhode Island law that Massachusetts marriages are legal in that state.
There was a lot of opposition, starting with the governor, also from the Catholic Church, which is very strong in Massachusetts and the Boston area. Where did the church finally come down on this? What were the last words from the church as we headed toward this historic development?
Well, late last week, Archbishop Sean O'Malley, the Archbishop of Boston, said that it was a sad day today would be a sad day for Catholics because of this transformation of the legal definition of marriage. But he urged Catholics to treat homosexuals with compassion, essentially stay away and not protest these weddings and to let gays and lesbians today have their day.
Now, there's a big open window for gay marriage here. There is also a potential rollback here. There is a constitutional amendment movement underway. How does that look, Fred?
Well, here's where that stands. The legislature this year passed a constitutional amendment that would ban same-sex marriage, but it must, under Massachusetts law, vote again on that proposal in the next session, so sometime in 2005. At that point, if it passes, the voters would get a chance to vote on the issue in 2006 on the ballot.
And how are political pundits in this state calling that vote, if and when it comes to that vote? Does it look as though gay marriage is here to stay, or is it very vulnerable to constitutional amendment and rollback?
At the moment, the polls have shown that most people in Massachusetts oppose same-sex marriage. Advocates of same-sex marriage say, just wait and see. Well, by the time folks have gotten married for a couple of years and their neighbors realize it's no big deal, they'll support same-sex marriage.
But for today, the first state in the nation offering sanctioning fully legal gay marriage, quite a day. Fred, thanks for your coverage and thanks for joining us tonight.
You're very welcome, Tom.
We're talking tonight about an historic day for gay marriage and the unresolved national debate around that issue as the country sees its first state, Massachusetts, make gay marriage fully, formally legal. You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Gay marriage is happening. Is the country ready for this? 1-800-423-TALK. I want to welcome to our conversation now from Washington, Jonathan Rauch. He's vice president of the Independent Gay Forum and author of the new book, Gay Marriage, Why It Is Good for Gays, Good for Straights, and Good for America. Good evening and welcome, Jonathan Rauch.
Tom, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you tonight. A big day. And Maggie Gallagher joins us from New York. She's president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. She's a syndicated columnist and co-author of The Case for Marriage, Why Married People Are All Married People are Happier, Healthier, and Better Off Financially. Good evening and welcome, Maggie Gallagher.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks to both of you for being here. I know you come down very differently on the subject of gay marriage. We want to dig into that tonight and hear from our callers in the state where this is happening, hear from callers around the country looking on at what they think about it. Jonathan Rauch, first to you, a big day for everybody, I guess, in the gay rights movement. Did you think it would come this far, this fast?
No, in a word. I remember a conversation with my father in 1995 urging me not to write about same-sex marriage because it was so crazy it would never happen. It's come a long way
in
a
very short
time.
High in the sky, my son.
Exactly.
And here it is right in front of us today. You must be in touch with people in Massachusetts and around the country. What's the kind of, response is right across the community, but within the gay community to start, what are you hearing from people who are celebrating or looking forward to celebrating this institution, you know, as participants, something that was never open before?
You know, even if you're not a participant, this is a big day. Not many people go to the moon, Tom, but once human beings have been to the moon, it changes the way we think about ourselves, and that's true for gay people all across the country who've grown up until today understanding that they would be locked out of the culture of marriage and all the benefits it brings. And as of May 17th, 2004, gay people are in a fundamentally different relationship with society, a much more promising and healthy one, I think.
And do you see this as a breakthrough in Americans' relationship with homosexuality itself?
No, I see it as the start of a long conversation that's going to take a generation or more to work out. We have a deep divide in this country now about the meaning of marriage, particularly between older people and younger people. Older people think that same-sex marriage is a contradiction or an abomination. People under 30 think that opposite-sex-only marriage is just discrimination, and we're just going to have to work through that state by state over a period of years.
Maggie Gallagher, you've looked closely at marriage, studied it for a long time, have opposed gay marriage. Your thoughts on this day when the first state breaks that line, that prohibition on gay marriage?
Well, I agree with Jonathan about so much, including the importance of marriage. But for someone like me, it is a sad day. I think that's the dominant emotion. I think it's a breaking of our common culture of marriage. And Jonathan, when he talks about the need for a state-by-state generational discussion, is acknowledging that we now have rather different views of what marriage is at play in the public square. And as somebody who spent most of the last decade working to strengthen marriage and reduce divorce and family fragmentation, the thing that I've gone around and said that seems to, and other people, it seems to have made a difference, is that children need mothers and fathers, and marriage is critical in getting that for children. And I don't understand how we're going to raise a generation of young men to be good family men in a culture that says mothers, fathers, it doesn't matter. It's just two adults doing, making a commitment to each other. That's what marriage is about.
And to you, that's not good enough. To you, it needs to be a male and a female.
Well, I don't think that it is good enough, in the sense that I don't think that if you just tell the next generation, I don't think the norm that needs reinforcing is that soulmates should marry. What seems to make a difference, what really calls men and women who are attracted to the opposite sex, who are the people who are at risk of creating, who are responsible for creating the 24 million fatherless children we have, what makes a difference is telling both the men, but also the women, the mothers, that getting a father for your children is a really important thing to do. And we tell the young men, being a father, which means being a good husband, is the most important thing a man could do. And right now in Massachusetts, the law and the government is committed to the opposite proposition.
Mary Gallagher, John Rausch, we've got to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking about an historic day for gay marriage and the unresolved national debate around it. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about an historic day for gay marriage and the unresolved national debate as the country sees its first state, Massachusetts, make gay marriage fully, formally legal. You can join this conversation. Are you celebrating tonight? Are you gay and newlywed or about to be? Are you baffled tonight, angry, worried? Are you somewhere in between? Do you see this as a milestone in the understanding of American civil rights? Do you see it as a misreading of those rights, as a mistake? Did you ever imagine you would live to see legal, state-sanctioned gay marriage in your lifetime? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jonathan Rausch, Maggie Gallagher, raising issues around the integrity, the understanding of the family that gay marriage is likely to propagate over time. How do you see the effect of gay marriage rippling out across society over years and decades going forward and our understanding of family and procreation and all the rest?
I'm optimistic, Tom. Unlike Maggie, I think that the ramifications of gay marriage are, if anything, likely to be positive for the institution of marriage. This sends a signal, as strong a cultural signal as it's possible to send, that if you really care about someone, if you're committed, you ought to get married. No exceptions, no exclusions. And this comes after 30 years in which heterosexuals have been fleeing from marriage, have been decoupling marriage from coupledom. This is a chance to move back up, away from the, to claw our way back up the slippery slope, I should say, toward a recommitment to the notion that sex and love and marriage go together. No exclusions, no excuses. And that's a message that I think is good for marriage and good for children. I think, if anything, it will increase the likelihood that straight couples will get married rather than just cohabiting or forming a civil union or a domestic partnership or some other alternative to marriage.
Maggie Gallagher, a big symbol that sex, love, and marriage go together. That sounds like something on its own that a supporter of marriage could warm to.
I wish Jonathan were in charge of what this means, this development means. I'd have a lot less compunctions. But, you know, I don't see any signs that this is true, frankly. I mean, I don't see any signs that other countries that have taken this step are on their way to a big marriage renaissance. And I think that there's something, you know, that in a, what is undoubtedly true about the Goodrich decision is that it says that people like me who think there's something special about husbands and wives who can become mothers and fathers are at least akin to bigots. And I don't understand how you can propagate one of the most important ideas that people who are attracted to the opposite sex need to hear if we're defining that very idea as a form of bigotry.
And you're saying that when the Massachusetts Supreme Court says in the Goodrich decision that full respect for the equal rights of Americans requires that the institution of marriage be extended to homosexuals, that somehow diminishes heterosexual marriage?
Well, to treat two things as the same and to say it's discrimination to treat two men or two women raising children any differently than a husband and a wife raising children is to say that there's something illegitimate about the idea that children need mothers and fathers and that marriage has something critical to doing it. And the court really did say that. It said that the Massachusetts state legislature has already decided that family structure doesn't matter. I don't think that that's a correct interpretation, but they said that. And that marriage is really about adult affirmations of love and identity. It really, you know, occasionally they will drag in children when they're children of same-sex couples, but the idea that there's any important purpose about children relating to why we have laws about marriage is something that the Supreme Court of the state of Massachusetts rejected and rejected strongly.
You know,
when the first couple, gay couple, that gets a license in Provincetown tells the Boston Herald that they think that the idea of forever and the idea of fidelity are both overrated and that they have an open marriage, I just wonder about how much this is going to be a celebration of the ideals that Jonathan and I share.
Maggie Gallagher, on that front, is there a contradiction between adult affirmation and adults raising children? Is there a reason that those have to be in contradiction?
Well, if you're saying that there's no difference, that it's only discrimination, bigotry, or animus, which really the court did say,
Okay.
It explains why you might have any preference or any special attention to making marriages between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, to preferring mothers and fathers for children. Then, yes, you're severing the, you know, what is an already, let's admit, it's an already weakened relationship in our culture. You know, what I, my understand, what I've learned in 10 years of trying to strengthen marriage, and in fact, we were in the middle of turning around marriage before this happened, I wish I could get back to it, is that the most important argument that has to be made is not that adults like to celebrate their love, that's fine, I mean, but that children need mothers and fathers, and bringing together the man and the woman who make the baby so that they can love each other and the baby too is just core not only to our own marriage tradition but to every known version of marriage until the last 5 years.
Jonathan Rauch, of course, in that sense, Maggie, I guess, is indisputably correct or largely correct. This has been the deeply historical understanding of marriage. What do you see as we sit here on this sort of vantage point, looking forward? What do you see as the long-term impact on male-female marriage and that kind of, you know, biological generator of new generations of bringing gays into the picture of marriage?
Well, I think, if anything, it's likely to strengthen it. My guess is that gay marriage won't have an enormous impact on straight marriage one way or another, because we're talking about extending marital opportunities to, what, 3-4% of the population, unlike, say, with divorce reform, where we altered the terms of marriage for virtually all straight couples. But I disagree with Maggie about how this signal is going to be read. Maggie reads gay marriage as a signal to straight people that they shouldn't get married, or that they should get divorced, or that they should have kids out of wedlock. I don't see that at all. The logic fails for me. It seems to me that the logic of gay marriage is the simple age-old logic that marriage is a good institution for adults, and it's a good institution for kids, and lots of gay couples have kids, and lots of straight couples don't have kids, but that the real point is that marriage creates family, and to have more married families is good for kids, good for adults, it's good for communities, it's good for society. So I'd say this is a step back towards the world long-term that I think Maggie Gallagher and I both want to live in.
Well, a lot of wedding bells today on this historic day. Let's hear from our callers on what they make of all of it. Ken's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, I'm celebrating today. I'm the senior pastor of a United Church of Christ church, and we are, as a parish, very supportive. This is in Newton Highlands.
Uh-huh.
And we've done a lot of theological study. The one thing that I disagree with that one of your guests said is that there's a unanimity in our history. If you read the Bible itself, there are seven different models for marriage. And they're not just all one male and one female, as we're sometimes led to believe. And, of course, both the president and the governor have suggested that. But this is an important model. And, in fact, a lot of scholars point out that there have been at least gay marriages, if not lesbian, also throughout history, at least during pockets of acceptance.
Ken, let me ask you then, you're a Christian minister. A, did you have opposition in your church? And B, what do you think about the long-term implications for male-female relationships? Maggie Gallagher says this is going to be corrosive to those relationships, those marriages. What do you think?
Well, on that second question, I just don't see how. I'm married myself. I have a daughter. I hope she grows up happy and filled with faith and also acceptance. Yesterday, I finished teaching the confirmation class to this year's crop of confirmands.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked, you know, what are the bottom line rules for Christianity? And we wrestled with that for a little bit. And Jesus has one bottom line rule, love one another. It's in the latter part of the Gospel of John. I think the long-term implications are if people are loving each other, and that means a variety of things, and it means hard things, too. I think it's good for everyone, and if it's good for the health of gay and lesbian people, such as teens who have the highest suicide rate when they're wrestling with their sexuality and self-condemnation, it's going to be good for us, it's going to be good for Massachusetts, and I don't want to be too, you know, broad stroke here, but I think it's good for America if we're having healthy, loving people as part of our culture and society.
Ken, we hear the endorsement right there, and I thank you for the call. I want to welcome to our conversation now from Brookline, Massachusetts, Lisa Cukier. She's an associate at the Boston law firm Burns & Levinson. She's past co-chair of the Massachusetts Lesbian and Gay Bar Association. Good evening and welcome, Lisa Cukier.
Good evening, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Lisa, I hope you will unpack for us what the implications of this big day in Massachusetts are for gay marriages around the country. People who get married in Massachusetts, whether they're resident or not, will they now have all the rights of any other married couple within the state? And what about couples who might come here from elsewhere around the United States and go back home? What does this deliver? What doesn't it deliver?
Well, Tom, this is really the million-dollar question. There is so much uncertainty. What we do know is that it's fair to presume that people who marry in Massachusetts, same-sex couples, can take advantage of Massachusetts law. But we know that in 1996, the federal government enacted DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which is an anachronism for a law which denies federal protections to same-sex couples who marry. So we can also presume that the federal government will deny key benefits that are available to opposite-sex couples. One of those would be Social Security survivorship benefits. Another would be VA benefits or federal tax benefits. We know, for example, that Massachusetts same-sex couples will be allowed to file their state taxes as a married couple filing jointly. And we also know that that same couple cannot file federally.
So you're saying they won't have Social Security survivor benefits, they won't file joint federal taxes, they won't have veterans benefits as a married couple?
That's correct. And there's also one of the greatest problems that exists right now, and one of the greatest pieces of uncertainty, is what happens to a Massachusetts same-sex couple who vacations out of state, where perhaps one member of the marriage is injured and ends up in the hospital. We don't know yet if the marriage is going to be portable. And what I mean by that is we don't know if a state other than Massachusetts is going to honor that marriage and allow the healthy spouse into the hospital.
So what about just a couple that's married in Massachusetts and then moves somewhere? They move to California or to Alabama or Wisconsin. Are they still married?
You know, it is a terrific risk. I'll tell you, there was a case that was decided based on a civil union. A couple received a civil union in Vermont and moved to Texas, and the Texas court denied the couple a dissolution because Texas felt that, well, Texas doesn't offer marriage, and if Texas doesn't offer marriage to same-sex couples, then a same-sex couple in Texas cannot take advantage of the Texas divorce laws.
Lisa, does that mean that ultimately this will have to end up before the U.S. Supreme Court, or is the court likely to leave it as a patchwork that Americans will just gay Americans will navigate as they can?
That's another terrific million-dollar question. What I anticipate is that there are going to be a series of state challenges in the states that have state DOMA-like laws, and I anticipate that we're going to eventually see a challenge on the federal level. So, yes, it is expected that there will be a federal challenge that will end up at the U.S. Supreme Court.
Do you think the Supreme Court is going to want to pick this up and make nationwide policy itself, or is it perhaps going to say, states, you deal with it?
You know, the federal government may leave this to the states, and that is one of the pieces of uncertainty. But what I do anticipate is that there is going to be a case where there is some painfully obvious discrimination on the federal level, where there's a same-sex spouse who is denied a benefit that their opposite-sex neighbor is able to take advantage of on account of the federal DOMA, and that a case like that is so painfully obviously discriminatory will end up in the federal courts, and the courts will adjudicate it.
Well, I guess that's the history of civil rights issues in the states. They take a step somewhere, and it can take a long time and a lot of work for that to ripple through the entire society. Lisa Cukier, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Lisa Cukier is an associate at the Boston law firm of Burns and Levinson. I want to turn now to Somerville, Massachusetts, where we're joined by Annette Plow. She today married Amy Whitehead. They've been together for 6 years. Her new spouse, Amy, has laryngitis from all the excitement and has lost her voice, but Annette is with us. Good evening and welcome, and congratulations. Annette Plow.
Hi, thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. So you're married.
Yes, we are.
It happened. Where did you do it? What was the ceremony?
Last night we went down to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to the City Hall, and applied for our license there. This morning again we went back to Cambridge to the probate court and got the 3-day waiver, and then went back to Cambridge City Hall to get our license. And then since we live in Somerville, we wanted to go to Somerville City Hall, and we were married there by a justice of the peace.
Amy, or Annette, had you been waiting for a long time? Had you been longing to get married? Why did you marry? Everybody has the option, gay or straight. Not everybody does it. Why did you do it?
Gay people and straight people growing up in the society have, we're all exposed to the same norms and the same desires, like that you want to get a job and you want to find a partner and you want to get married and create a family. And just because we're gay, we don't, not take on those desires. And when I met Amy, both she and I knew that each other was someone very special and that we really wanted to be together and to declare our love for one another, for our community and for ourselves, and become a couple.
And Annette, as you're there tonight, married, do you feel that your commitment is any different from a heterosexual marriage commitment?
No, not at all. Not at all. We actually have had a religious ceremony 2.5 years ago, and so it doesn't seem like it's any different from anyone else's, except for the benefits.
Well, Annette, we can feel your joy in the day, and we congratulate you on it. To you and to Amy, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having this show.
Jonathan Rauch, there it is, the voice of the newlywed gay American in Massachusetts, and very obviously happy to be so.
Real married people, and you know what people are going to discover, Tom, or rediscover, since so many of us in America have forgotten, is that marriage doesn't just ratify an existing relationship. Marriage fortifies relationships. It makes them stronger by weaving the couple into the community and by creating expectations of the people around the couple, you know, the friends and the in-laws and the co-workers and the neighbors, that they'll be there for each other, that they'll be family for each other. So this is going to result in a strengthening of those bonds of the couples and of the communities.
Maggie Gallagher, you can hear the commitment to that in the voice of Annette Plow, married today. As someone who's worked hard for marriage, do you find it at all hard to resist that urge to commitment in her voice?
Well, I wish her happiness. I don't think this is about my wishing or anything else. I wish the difference between Jonathan and I, and it's very clear, and again, I hope I'm wrong about this, but I don't think I am, is that Jonathan believes this will have a big impact on the gay and lesbian community and a minimal or positive impact on marriage as a whole. And I really think that we have to acknowledge the seriousness of what we're doing in redefining our most basic social institution for protecting children. And I have to say that people attracted to the opposite sex, you know, have not set a very good example. That this to me, this is one more example of conducting social experiments on marriage. Not that I think that Annette is doing this for this reason, but this is what the judges of the state Supreme Court are doing, is conducting a social experiment on marriage in order to, you know, suit what the adults want marriage to be.
Maggie, Jonathan, we've got to take a short break. A sacred day to some, a social experiment to others. Where do you see this big day in Massachusetts, a big day for gay marriage right across the country? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about an historic day for gay marriage and the unresolved national debate as the country sees its first state, Massachusetts, make gay marriage fully, formally legal. You can join our conversation tonight. In your view, what does legal gay marriage say about where the country is headed? And look down the road 20 years. What's the impact of gay marriage on families, on our understanding of what a family is? Does this change the meaning of marriage? Or just reimagine what it's always meant? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight from Washington by Jonathan Rauch. He's author of Gay Marriage, Why It's Good for Gays, Good for Straights, and Good for America. From New York, Maggie Gallagher, president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy and an opponent of gay marriage. We're joined right now from Washington by CNN's political analyst Bill Schneider, who's been watching all the developments of the day. Good evening and welcome, Bill Schneider.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you. Bill, this has been already a political hot potato. How do you think think the developments of this day are going to play out in the presidential election ahead?
Well, both President Bush and Senator Kerry are doing their best not to talk very much about this issue. Now, Bush did, under pressure, come out in favor of a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriages. He was pressured to do that by the religious right. They really put him on the spot. He hasn't really talked about it very much since then. He issued a statement, not a personal appearance today, but a statement saying that he continues to support a gay marriage amendment. What's interesting about that is the President of the United States plays absolutely no role in amending the Constitution. He gives it moral support, but he doesn't ever have to sign anything. I think he simply is showing the faith with the religious conservatives. On the other hand, it's going absolutely nowhere in a Republican Congress, which shows you that legislators really don't want to touch this thing.
So the Republican Party has not been terribly reluctant to use wedge issues in the past. Does this mean that gay marriage is not seen as an effective wedge issue to pull votes their way, or are they standing on principle? How do you interpret the president's sort of low profile here?
The president and the Republican Party's low profile is explainable very simply because the issue is very divisive, and you have to walk a very fine line between being intolerant, and that's not the image that the president and the Republicans want to portray of themselves. They don't want to endorse gay marriage, but they don't want to appear intolerant, and that's always been a problem. Look, most Americans draw this line. They say they want to tolerate. They don't want to oppress anyone. They don't want to discriminate against anyone. And they're willing to allow gay civil unions. They think gay people should live any way they choose to live their lives. But people draw the line at the word marriage. Why? Well, our research and some others that I've seen has shown that marriage implies approval. Mm-hmm. People say they want to be tolerant of gays, but they don't want to be forced to express approval of homosexuality. And for some reason that, frankly, I don't understand, the word marriage implies to most straight people approval.
Well, it's always been celebrated and it's seen as sacred. Let me ask you, Bill Schneider, Massachusetts, of course, is Senator John Kerry's home state. He's on the record as opposed to gay marriage, but for civil union. Is it possible that the Republicans think this will work against him even if they don't say much about it, that it will stir up their base even if they don't make a big public issue of it?
Exactly. It's a sleeper issue, and most Republicans are hoping that's what will happen. They don't want the President of the United States to be seen as exploiting intolerance or prejudice, and I don't think he intends to. And they're not going to say too much about it, if anything, at their convention. But what they expect is that the religious right will mobilize around this issue. They'll rally in a number of key states like Oregon, Ohio, Louisiana, where they're hoping, not the Republicans, but conservative activists are hoping to put anti-gay marriage initiatives on the ballots. And they're hoping that those initiatives will bring out a backlash vote from religious conservatives who will vote against gay marriage and, not coincidentally, vote for President Bush. But the Republican Party does not want to have its fingerprints on those measures and doesn't want to be seen as encouraging them.
Bottom line, Bill, how big an issue do you think it will be, touted or not, in the November election?
Let me tell you something. 16% of voters told us in our poll that it is that they cannot vote for someone who does not share their views on the issue of gay marriage. So it's a test issue for about one voter in six. And 86% of them are opposed to gay marriage. So even though most voters don't really care about the issue, those who care about the issue tend to be anti-gay marriage.
Bill Schneider, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Good to have you again.
My pleasure.
Bill Schneider, CNN's political analyst, joining us tonight from Washington. I want to turn to our callers. A lot have been waiting. Gabe is calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Gabe. You're on the air.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Sure.
I want to say you are a very good host. I've listened to you for a long time, and I think you're very good.
You're very kind, Gabe. What's on your mind?
Thanks. Well, a lot of things, but I'll make it short. You know, the guy who called from Newton, the senior pastor, said Jesus in the Bible said love one another, but he failed to mention Jesus and the Bible in general. Tell us to live without sin. It doesn't mean we are perfect people, but there are things that we must not do, and this is one of them. And, you know, I'm tired of also to hear comparison between the gay and the lesbian issue and the civil rights, you know, and the civil rights struggle of the 19, you know, the slavery and the other issue. But it's not the same. This is just something common sense. Even animals know it. This one is very, very wrong. And what it will lead to is a moral collapse for the country and for the people. And children who don't have father and mother, I don't know why people are so blind. I hope there will be. I hope there are many people like Maggie and others who understand what it means to raise children.
Gabe, we've got your sentiment, and thanks for calling in with it. Jonathan Rauch, what about it? Gabe says this is not a civil rights issue. This is just something that, you know, it's natural, male, female. Is it a civil rights issue in your mind, Jonathan?
Yes, it's a civil rights issue, though it's not only a civil rights issue. It's also a moral issue, and it's also a family policy issue, and it's all of those things wrapped up together. But to someone like Gabe, I would point out that the Bible also says pretty clearly that marriage isn't between one man and one woman. It's between one man and many women. And the Bible says that divorce is absolutely forgiven. We have that in no uncertain terms from Jesus himself. So we've made changes in marriage over the years. I'd say for the most part, changes for the better. And I would put this in that category, even while granting that it's not just as simple as saying it's a plain old civil right.
And what's your sense, Jonathan, from Bill Schneider's analysis of the political impact of this? How significantly do you think it might play into the presidential campaign? Is this going to hurt John Kerry?
I think in a close election, it helps Bush. Bush has two stealth factors in his favor that help tip the election his direction in case of a tie. One may be gay marriage, for all the reasons that Bill Schneider alluded to. And the second is Ralph Nader.
So Ralph and gay marriage side by side could hurt him. Stan is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Stan. You're on the air.
Dan?
Hello, Stan. Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, you're on, Stan.
Dan.
Oh, so I'm sorry. Dan, welcome.
Well, I would say that particularly in the context of what has recently come to dominate news here at home and abroad, I'd invite everyone to appreciate this development as a very welcome advance in the recognition and the protection of basic human rights and of equality, and a meaningful reminder that our country might proudly inspire and set an example for others. If we fear for the welfare of children and families, I think we would do better to address the endemic ills of poverty, lack of health care and affordable housing, domestic violence, and a host of other issues.
Dan, do you think that Americans will one day look back on this day as a significant milestone in civil rights terms?
Yes, I hope so, and I am optimistic considering the generation gap that's visible in terms of views on this particular issue.
Attitudes on Gay Marriage. Dan, thanks very much for your call. Maggie Gallagher, I want to turn to you once more and ask you again to take us into exactly how you see this as working against heterosexual relationships and mother, father, and child relationships. We're hearing a number of some voices agreeing with you tonight, others saying that this is a great thing. I'm still not quite getting the dynamic of how you see this as destructive to the relationship of men and women and children.
You know, listen, 56% of Democrats now support, in a poll released today, a constitutional amendment protecting marriage. 63% of independents do. 67% of African Americans, Hispanics, and white people do. I don't think that 67% of Americans are in favor of bigotry or intolerance towards gay people.
And I'm not suggesting that.
Right. I think they understand that there is something extremely troubling about having courts redefine the common meaning of marriage, and that it will not just affect the handful of gay and lesbian people who do it.
I'm just trying to understand the inner logic of that.
Images, you know, part of it is believing that you don't make up marriage in your head. And on this, Jonathan and I agree that, in fact, our, you know, the next generation's ideas of what marriage is and what it means are going to be shaped by what we're allowed to say in the public square and what is our common shared understanding of marriage.
Are you suggesting that men and women will lose interest in one another?
I am saying that we have every evidence that marriage can disappear if it's not socially supported, and that if you can't say that mothers and fathers matter for children, and that's one of the key reasons why marriage is critical, that you're not going to have a strong and healthy marriage culture.
So same-sex marriages somehow corrode
it's
or dilute?
To affect what the next generation thinks about what marriage is. I had a conversation with a boy, a young man on a plane, who said, well, you know, why are you against gay marriage? And I said, well, I think mothers and fathers matter, don't you? And he said to me, no. And I said, well, and I pulled out my big guns, and I said, well, what about you? Do you think that you matter to your kids? And he said to me, well, you know, basically, this is the message we're getting. Kids are resilient. They'll adjust. He said to me, basically, no, as long as you abandon your children early enough.
But how does gay marriage equal abandonment of children?
Because it tells the next generation that marriage is about adult celebrations of love and affirmation of adult needs, that it is not any longer related to the idea of making the next generation and giving it mothers and fathers. That is what marriage is no longer about in the state of Massachusetts, and that will affect everyone in the state of Massachusetts. Maybe not those of us who are married now who are raised in a different culture, but as public schools, as advertising, as television messages, as they come to embrace and promote this new thing called marriage that the court has created, it's going to change everyone's understanding of what marriage is in ways that will make it much, much harder to raise children who think that mothers and fathers matter.
Jonathan Rauch, we've heard you say you don't agree with that, that you see this as raising marriage up, as giving it as a positive thing for marriage. But do you see it changing our understanding of male-female marriages over time somehow, in any dimension?
I see it more as following those changes than leading it. We wouldn't be having this debate today if we still lived in a time when, for example, it was not up to the individuals themselves to choose their mates, their parents did it, or if we lived in an age where marriage was seen as fundamentally about the difference in sex roles. But all of those changes have already happened, and the Supreme Court has already ruled back now in the 1960s that marriage, legally speaking, civil marriage, is a fundamental civil right. And once those changes have already been made, once we've said marriage is basically an egalitarian institution that people can choose for themselves, then I think it's very hard to deny those same prerogatives to gay couples.
But so that's the civil rights argument. But in terms of the internal dynamics of families and the cohesiveness over time of male, female, heterosexual unions that make children, do you see any loosening effect on that of extending marriage to homosexuals or not?
If anything, my guess is that there will be a tightening of the nexus between marriage and relationship, that marriage will become more of a universal expectation than it could possibly be in a world where marriage is one of a lot of lifestyle options, and you've also got civil unions and partnerships and cohabitation. So my hope is that it will tighten these bonds. That said, we can't be sure, and that's why marriage, it's too big to gamble the entire country. So that's why I favor trying it in some states, just a few states. Massachusetts is a good place to start.
What's your expectation of where this might go next, Jonathan? Look out 10, 15, 20 years. Do you think it will be most of the country permitting gay marriage or not?
Probably not. Most of the states, as you noticed in your intro, have already banned same-sex marriage. Most of them have constitutional bans. Mm-hmm. My guess is that Massachusetts and one of perhaps Oregon or California or New Jersey will have same-sex marriage, maybe three of those in total. And a few other states, New York and Rhode Island, will recognize out-of-state gay marriages. And then we'll enter a period where we have some time to look at this thing and sit back and watch for a while and see what happens and see how it works. That at least is my hope.
Well, it's a big, big day for a lot of people who will be plunging into this new world. And it is a new world for Massachusetts, for the entire country. Maggie Gallagher, thank you so much for being with us tonight. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you.
Maggie Gallagher is president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. And Jonathan Rauch, thanks for all your insights and observations tonight. Thanks for the book.
Thank you, Tom.
Jonathan Rauch, vice president of the Independent Gay Forum and author of Gay Marriage, Why It's Good for Gays, Good for Straights, and Good for America. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.